Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Hi, Mitch. How are you going?
Good morning, Amelia.
We're up nice and early this morning because we have a special guest that's calling in from overseas. It's evening time over there and really excited to have a chat today and have this conversation today.
Yeah.
So we have with us John Gray, Dr. John Gray, the world-renowned American relationship counsellor, lecturer and author, also the author of the best-selling book Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. Welcome, Dr. John Gray.
John, you're kind
of... Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with both of you.
Yeah, it's great to have you on here. You're kind of a demigod for me, buddy. I have to say I've got a little bit of an infatuation, but I'll try to calm it down. We always start this segment off with a great song, and I was thinking John would have something sexy for
us. I'm sure he will. Do you have anything in
mind? Anything at all, John?
For me, it's romantic. It's a theme song from any of the songs in the album, Somewhere in Time.
Right.
I don't know if you remember that album, that movie. That was fantastic.
Oh.
I make love, I'll often put that one on.
Awesome.
It's totally romantic. It's about, some guy has to go back in time to find the woman he loves. I mean, it was just amazing. It was amazing.
Oh, that's cool.
So let me ask you a question. Are you a Barry White fan? Are you a... Did you ever listen to any Barry White?
Of course I know Barry White.
Of course I know Barry White.
Everybody knows Barry White, Mitch.
That's right.
You're 68 years old, John, and I have to ask, the first question is, how are the testosterone levels at 68?
How are my testosterone levels?
Yeah.
I have sex about 5 times a week. I wake up every morning awake. I measured my testosterone levels, and they're 50% higher than when I was 30.
Oh, my God.
Mitch wants to know your secret, then.
My father always said to me, son, the reason that you have an erection when you wake up in the morning is to make sure that you never fall out of the bed. So before we dive down the rabbit hole, the book, when did you originally write the book?
The first book.
Well, I wrote it in 1992. And you know what's interesting? That book, Men Are From Mars, was actually a rewrite of a book I wrote in 1989 that was twice as long.
Right.
And it's a good book. It was a bestseller, but not super famous. But I did a poll, and nobody ever finished it. It was so long. So I thought I'd take the simplest ideas and put them in Men Are From Mars so people, could read just a few chapters and they get the gist of it.
Right.
And it was short.
I was just chatting this morning. You've had a really interesting life up until that point. I hear you were a monk at one stage, and we've just come back. We spent a bit of time in India, and you'd spent a bit of time up in Laxmanjula, up in Rishikesh, where we've also spent a bit of time. We've literally roamed a few times now with about 40 of our clients through the Beatles ashram, and I hear you spent a bit of time there.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was when the Beatles went to be with the Maharishi. It was right after Woodstock, and we all got really high, but then afterwards we crashed down, and it was a real, real low point. And then my mother said, look, those Beatles, who's that with the Beatles? And then it was the Maharishi, and then I looked it up and saw that the Beatles were saying that the Maharishi, you could learn to meditate, and you could get high, and you wouldn't crash down. And so he came to America right after that, and I went to see him, and I just thought, this is the most amazing guy. He was bright, cheerful, fun, and he had a message that I'd never heard, all that Eastern philosophy stuff. I'd never heard that stuff before, so it was intriguing to me. I became his personal assistant. I lived with him for 9 years.
Wow.
I became a Hindu celibate monk. Yeah.
Wow.
I wanted to be like him.
Wow.
And, so 9 years.
9 years, yeah. It was a beautiful time in my life, and maybe I'd still be doing that. I don't know. But my brother was bipolar, and meditation didn't do it for him. So I said, look, I got to go and study psychology. Maybe that will help my brother.
Right.
So I left and found my way. And studying psychology, then I happened upon this need that people needed to understand that men and women were not the same. And to me, it was like, you know, the story, the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah.
Everybody was like, look how handsome the emperor is. We're all just the same. And I go, wait a second, we're not just the same. Yeah. Let's try to understand our differences in a positive way. And you know what's still interesting, and the universities and the states, not everywhere in the world, but some places in Europe still, there's still propaganda is that we are the same and that something's wrong with men. And it's so backward, and it's ruining their relationships, just ruining them.
Well, I love how with what you do, you've evolved into talking about neuroscience and you know, you've really wanted to nail it. And I mean, we speak a lot about the dualistic reality. We have a keen interest in quantum physics and neuroplasticity. And so I love how you delved in there and you've done it, you know, in such a way that people can understand, you know, that, you know, there's fundamental differences between feminine energy and masculine energy and the feminine brain and the masculine brain and, you know, in how they function, you know. So can we talk a little bit to that? And also can we, nowadays, like I had a conversation with one of my buddies the other day and he was saying like a 16-year-old daughter is dating a guy, but their first 6 dates were on Instagram. And I'm like, what? Yeah. They met on Instagram and they date on Instagram before they even physically meet each other. So where do you see relationships are going?
But we might have to start.
Let's start at the beginning.
You gave me 15 topics. I'll start with one that I love talking about. Neuroplasticity.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's really a good one. Is that, when we're growing up, we do certain behaviors, and if those behaviors are rewarded, then suddenly pathways go in the brain. So if I'm a little girl and I'm not rewarded for being feminine, then these masculine pathways set up, and unconsciously I started thinking I'm a guy and are behaving more like guys, more independent, as opposed to having the feminine qualities, which are more interdependent, relationship-oriented. And guys, if they're shamed for being masculine, it's a big deal, you know, that if you're shamed for being masculine, then what happens is you'll naturally open up these pathways towards the part of the brain which is more feminine. Now, what I'm saying is both we have masculine and feminine qualities in everybody, but biologically, men require certain stimulation in order to bump up their testosterone. If for well-being in a man, regardless of the neural pathways in the brain, you've got the hormones in the body. If men's testosterone levels aren't at a high level relative to a woman, he will be depressed or angry. Mm-hmm. And for women, if their estrogen levels are not 10 to 20 times higher than a man's, she cannot fall in love. And she even at 10 times, she needs 10 times more than a guy of estrogen to be happy. And to fall in love, she needs it to double. And that needs to, when a woman's in love, her estrogen levels are just way up there. And that allows her to be less picky, less demanding, less needy. It allows men, when their testosterone levels are higher, they become selfless. They become non-reactive. You know, all this reactivity we see in men these days, emotional upsets and whatever, tend to come when their estrogen levels are too high. So this is all like new information that our hormones actually regulate so much of our behavior and our attitudes.
Mm. So let's give some practical tips then. So how does a woman help a man's testosterone levels to be high and vice versa?
Is that even a thing that women have to help the man, or is it more that we do it ourselves? No, I'm asking.
It's a genuine question. Your job. My God.
These women just can't get it. Is that even a thing? I love it because there's a base level happiness. Okay. You know, if I'm giving a seminar on business success and I say, who's responsible for your success? Everybody will go, me, I'm responsible. If you're a failure, who's responsible for that failure? Damn. Your procrastination, your laziness, your lack of training, lack of discipline, not learning the new technologies. Okay. Who's responsible for that? You are. Yeah. And everybody go, I'm responsible. So if you say, who's responsible for your happiness? Most people go, I'm responsible for my happiness. Raise their hand. Then I say, now, in your marriage, who's responsible for your happiness? Well, when they come to me as a marriage counselor, it's always my partner's fault. My partner's bad. They're no good. Yeah. And that's where we become like children. And here's the interesting thing is that when you love someone very much, you pick, you know, you look around, you find who's a good person for me. You feel I can be myself when I'm with them. You feel safe. And when you feel safe, what happens is it activates all of the childlike feelings of when you weren't safe. They all come up and they get projected on your partner. So our behavior patterns between intimate partners become very childish. Mm. You know, we blame, we criticize, we try to change, we withhold, we punish. All kinds of stuff from our childhood comes up in our marriages. It's like a place of disaster zone, or it's a place where we can grow up and heal those reactivity from our childhood.
I love that. So
that's
you're saying
a real key thing.
So you're saying that because you feel safe in the relationship, you feel okay to express that, and your partner gets a brunt of it.
Yeah, it's literally. Your childhood comes up. A relationship can be healing. Your partner has the power to push your buttons so that anything unresolved from your childhood comes up. Mm. And many couples, they can't deal with what comes up, so they stop pushing each other's buttons, which means they stop getting so close. You see, why couples often stop having sex. Sex pushes all your buttons. Because, see, what's happening in sex is you're allowing somebody to make you happier. You're allowing somebody to take you to levels you can't get to on your own. And that is ideally what an intimate relationship is. This is back to your point about, is it a thing that she's supposed to make my testosterone go up? I'm supposed to make her estrogen go up. Literally, if we want a healthy relationship, we are responsible for healthy levels of our hormones. But through intimacy, you can take your partner higher than they can go on their own. Mm-hmm. So translate that into experience. My job is not to make my wife happy. My job is to make her happier. That's what I can do. She has to be happy with it, find that within herself. Mm-hmm. And that's where we get caught up. Now, having said that, as a guy, I can certainly make her unhappy. I mean, I can make it worse for her. Yeah. You know, we're all trying to find our center, our love, our open-heartedness. And if your partner doesn't know what they're doing, they think they're trying to help you, but they can actually make it harder for you to be yourself and open up.
Right. So
anyway, you wanted practical tips. That was what he had asked.
Yeah. Well, let me go back to that.
Not that I need them, John.
You're perfect.
That's right.
Everything is okay. No, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to step back into Mina from Mars for a minute. An idea that was already quite commonly known in Australia when I wrote Mina from Mars. It was about the shed. You know, the whole thing about a man has his shed. He goes to his shed. Now we just say the cave. I'd written in my book The Cave. But it's when a man is he's solving problems all day long. He literally is making testosterone, which lowers his stress. But he also uses it up. Particularly if it was a stressful day or a lot of exertion or concern, frustrations, whatever, he will make testosterone to regulate his stress. He's solving problems. And at the end of the day, he will be depleted to various degrees of testosterone. And what allows him to rebuild his testosterone is non-stressful challenges and relaxation. So, you know, I got this idea first from studying weightlifters. You know, this is back before the internet. There used to be these weightlifter magazines, and they always had libido products. You know, like, these are 20-year-old guys, 25-year-old guys. What do they need a libido product for? So what was going on? Well, it turns out that when they do all that weightlifting, they can use up their testosterone, and then they lose their libido. So what weightlifters had to learn to do if they want to keep healthy testosterone is not over-exercise. And they had to balance exercise, challenging the muscles, with rest. You need to have the rest time to recover, to rebuild your testosterone. And it turns out that men are so dependent on testosterone for their well-being, they can run out by solving problems all day. Mm. They need time to rebuild. And that's the cave idea. He has to withdraw from intimacy. You see, intimacy generates estrogen, and estrogen lowers testosterone. So you'll see a married man, for example, just getting married, your testosterone levels typically will drop. Now, mine didn't, and I have relationship skills that we'll talk about. But typically, on average, they do big studies on this, men's testosterone levels drop when they get married because marriage produces estrogen. It's intimacy, it's closeness, mm-hmm. it's connection, it's sharing, it's, you know, family life is wonderful. So that pleasure actually lowers the testosterone. Then when he has children, the children have so much, you feel so much unconditional love for the kids. Well, that's massive amounts of estrogen. So men's testosterone levels will tend to go down even more as his estrogen goes higher. So men need to keep their testosterone, they need to have a healthy sense of cave time and then come out, because in the presence of intimacy and love, estrogen gets produced. It's hard to rebuild your testosterone when there's so much estrogen around. So men will tend to want to withdraw. And at that time, women get their feelings hurt, because women, to produce estrogen, need connection. Sharing, talking, interaction, look at me, see me, help me, interact with me. You know, we're a team here, we're a family, let's all connect together. And if she's getting that attention, and really it comes down to something that ultimately it's true, but often people won't admit it, it's attention. Women want attention. See me, hear me, touch me, interact with me. It feels so good because it stimulates estrogen. It's not the only thing that does. But it's one of the reasons relationships, men don't understand relationships, is because they don't have that great need for estrogen. And when I say men don't understand relationships, I mean men don't understand what women need in relationships. Likewise, women don't understand what men need in relationships. Mm. So to create a ideal relationship is going to be distance and connection.
Because I remember the concept of, you know, men are hunters, so they stay quiet and they go out and they you know, they have to kill the deer and they have to get it home, and then the women go out in groups and they would forage and make noise so that they wouldn't get eaten. So women communicate and have that connection thing. And because I mean, I know I will come home sometimes and Angela will be like, oh my God, I just have so much to tell you. And I'll be like, oh my God, here we go. And then she'll just unload like 12,000 words on top of me. And then I'm sitting there like,
bleeding. Summarized the whole book. That's very good.
bleeding from the ears. I'm like, oh my God, I'll never ask that question again. But it's an equal balance of both. Yeah, it's you have
coming
to.
Because
I know what coming together and going apart. I know when I come home, you know, if you know, there's a part of me, if there's something going on for Ange, just naturally wants to fix. You know, I'm a fixer. I feel like I've always been a fixer, you know, and it'll let you afterwards. If I manage to fix something, I feel like, oh my God, I just, you know, I told you I'm so skilled. But if I get that wrong, she's like, I just want you to listen to me. Can you just stop trying to fix me? Like, there's nothing broken about me. I just want you to bloody listen, you know? So it's a tough thing to navigate without having read the book. But once I read the book, shit, this just makes so much sense. And it should be mandatory. Should be mandatory.
It should be. And even if you've read the book, we tend to forget it, okay?
Yeah.
I wrote that book. I was living it, teaching it, maybe in early 80s. So that's almost 40 years ago.
Yeah.
I still put these little stickers up. No need to solve the problem. Yeah. No need to solve the problem. The real problem is her stress levels. She needs attention, affection, understanding. Yeah. And just to be understood, she feels a connection. And when that connection is felt, the hormones go into balance, the stress levels drop, and she doesn't have a problem anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, life is always filled with problems, but it's not a big deal.
Mm.
But if you say to her, it's not a big deal, that just invalidates her feelings.
Yeah.
And it makes it worse.
Yeah.
But I will say to women, if your husband hasn't read the book or he forgets what's in the book and he's not a really good listener where he can just give you his attention and ask these three questions, I try to simplify it. Tell me more. Help me understand that better. Yeah. And what else? You know, just you have to do something if you're a guy. But really, you have to have the understanding that by listening, you're actually solving a problem.
Yeah.
Listening is solving a problem. She needs to be heard.
Yeah.
And what you can do. And if women if you say to me your husband doesn't listen, here's $1 million phrase that will allow him to hear what you're saying.
Where's my pen? Where's my pen?
You just say, here's here, right? Here it is, the big, big, big phrase, which is to say to him, I just need to talk to you for a few minutes. That's the key thing. That's one. You don't have to say anything. I just want to talk. You don't need to say anything. I prefer you not. Just listen. That's it. Like, why would you want to talk to me if you don't want me to say anything? But it doesn't matter. You just say that. Yeah. And then here's the big $1 million add-on to it that I didn't put in Men Are From Mars. I didn't know it then. It was when my wife said this one time. I said, unbelievable what you just said, honey. She said, I don't need you to say anything or fix anything. And it's not a big deal. Oh my God.
Nice.
If you say to a guy, I just need to talk for a little while, it's not a big deal. Yeah. Immediately he relaxes. Yeah. There's no fire to put out. You see, here's part of the design of men and women's brains. We'll do a little neural stuff for a moment. Is what they found is under moderate stress. Okay, so moderate stress is kind of like normal stuff these days. Adrenaline is being produced in the body. So under moderate stress, not heavy-duty stress, life's in danger, big, huge problem, but moderate stress, men tend to have no emotion, okay? We tend to detach, okay? It's like, oh, no big deal. I got to fix it. I'll handle it. And there's no emotion at all. Whereas for women, under moderate stress, they will tend to have 8 times increase of blood flow to the limbic system, the emotional part of the brain. So when a woman is actually very emotional, it's actually in the realm of moderate stress. The danger point is when women are upset with you and they're not emotional. That is cold as ice. That's when they glare at you. So when she detaches, it's a much bigger problem. When she has emotions, it's a smaller problem. Now, for men, we detach when there's a small problem, but when it's a big problem, we get all emotional. Mm. So now when women are all emotional, men misinterpret based on our own experience and think she's blowing everything out of proportion.
Yeah.
When really she's having an emotional reaction, which is different from the way men react to things.
Right.
Her literally, the emotions are there because that connects her to what's inside. She's able to talk about the emotions. That helps her to reflect on what's going on inside. Men, and that also increases her estrogen, which lowers her stress level. Whereas for men, they detach from emotion. They just disconnect.
Yeah.
And then their testosterone goes up. So right in the middle of a conversation, this is important for women to know, you'll be bringing up some issues and you'll notice how he'll look away and he'll disconnect completely. Mm-hmm. You're just going to go, what happened? What happened? We're having this conversation. He just disconnected. He doesn't know anything has changed. He's just thinking about what you said. Mm-hmm. But you feel he was with me and now he's gone, because see, connection is so important for women. We don't realize it, men.
Mm.
So what she can say, again, this is another great phrase, my daughter Lauren, and Lauren does all these great blogs at my website as well. A little plug for her because she's really good. And she says, you know, when her partner pulls away in a conversation, it would create kind of this reaction inside of her. And what she learned to do is just say to him, oh, you're thinking about what I just said, aren't you?
Right.
And he immediately says, yes. He's always thinking about what you said. Yeah. And as soon as he says yes, then you feel that connection again.
Right.
Because otherwise you start to have a stress response to him pulling away.
Yeah.
A woman will start to feel not safe, and then that activates even more emotion, which now needs to be expressed.
So when he's pulling away, I mean, I know when it happens for me, when I'm pulling away, which just for my wife, it's not very often. When I'm pulling away, it's normally because I'm trying to work shit out. You know, I'm sitting there going, okay, so how do I actually fix that? Okay, what do I try to fix it? Do I not try to fix it? You know, and okay, what's coming next? But it makes so much sense to see that they're so emotional about something. And when I see that amount of emotion, I think, fuck, so that amount of emotion actually equates to a major problem. But if I really look at it, it's really not that big a problem at all. So it's cool to hear that it's just because they're just 8 times more emotional than a man with a problem.
It's they're wired up differently. There's a different wiring inside of women, which goes to emotion, and rightly so, because, see, her go-to hormone, which increases well-being in her, puts her body into balance, is estrogen. And talking about what you feel, that's self-reflecting on what you feel, increases estrogen. What you just described is thinking about, okay, what do I do here? What's important? What have I not done? What should I do? What's the priority? Do I have to do anything? Is this really? We have to constantly measure how important something is to be acted on right away, because testosterone says take action. If there's a fire, we know jump, go fast. And if we misinterpret her emotions, we think there's a fire. And the way you put out a fire is to blow it out. So we have, and we have all kinds of mechanisms inside of us as men to keep estrogen from flaring. Because if estrogen flares up, when estrogen becomes too high in men, we go into a fight or flight response. Fight or flight in men, and this is news for people. Most people think when men are in fight or flight, when they want to fight or they're arguing, that's flight, you know, defending yourself, whatever. When you're in that state of fight or flight, most people associate that with testosterone. But actually, it's estrogen. That's what we find now. It's testosterone's going down at those moments and estrogen's going up. Emotions are estrogen.
You speak about anger in men being high levels of estrogen as well. And, so is that related to what you're just saying there?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is that when men, you know, what we see for a lot of men as an average, not every man, but as an average, as men get older, their estrogen levels get higher. Now, if you maintain your testosterone levels, meaning you, and what maintains it is your self-esteem. If you feel successful, if you feel successful in the presence of your children, in the presence of the people you work for, in the presence of your wife, which she will have the biggest influence on you if you're having sex, if you get the message that you are successful in providing what's needed, that keeps your testosterone levels up. Then as you naturally age for men, their estrogen levels will get higher. So my testosterone is actually higher than when I was a young guy, but also my estrogen is much, much higher. Estrogen is when you're, is wisdom, basically. It's when you're able to feel confident, but also compassionate. Okay. You know, when I was younger, things were a much bigger deal. You know, if my wife, you know, was asking too much, I'd get all upset or something. Now it's kind of like, okay, let me see if I can do that. What's the big deal here? So that's the aging wisdom is for men is estrogen rising, but always your testosterone levels need to be what they at their best. Then you feel young and vibrant and all that good stuff. The flip side of that is women naturally their testosterone levels will increase as they age, and their estrogen levels naturally drop when they go through menopause. But keep this in mind, but they can make plenty of estrogen from their adrenal glands unless their adrenal glands are stressed. So women today are so stressed, or lots of women are so stressed, that when they lose their ovaries, which are producing estrogen, then they have no estrogen. And that's when they can't fall in love. That's when they can't feel the love that they used to feel for their partner, or they're divorced and they can't fall in love.
So isn't it, it's funny, though, how it's more of a chemical conundrum than it is a relationship conundrum, or it's as much as a chemical conundrum as it is a relationship conundrum. You know, if a woman's going in, not weird, is it how I threw myself in there? If women are going into menopause and they're no longer producing, then we want to blame something on the outside, and men, you know, want to blame the woman, and women want to blame the man, and but in actual fact, it's biology. Just a shift in biology.
There's so much shifts in biology that affect our brain, but how we use our brain and our behavior skills, we can make enough estrogen if you're a woman, and you can make enough testosterone as a man. What you have to know is whenever we're in the blame mode, if we're men, our testosterone is going to go down. That's why we go to the cave to temporarily forget what's ever bothering us. See, we have that ability if we use it. Unfortunately, some well-meaning psychologists are always telling us to express how we feel. Actually, when your feelings are not from an open-hearted place, you need to temporarily disconnect from your feelings. And I emphasize temporarily. You need to go do something that makes you feel good and that you're good at. That's a testosterone producer. You're accomplishing, you're achieving. You know, you could be working out. You know, I can get on my bicycle and ride my bicycle. I can go meditate. I could go drive my car, and I could go clean up a garage. I could go wash my car. Anything which is productive, where you're doing something, a result that has meaning to you. Or it can be a hobby, you know, which is playing golf or playing tennis or whatever. You're doing some activity which is challenging you, but there's no stress associated with it. That's going to rebuild your testosterone. And we have to have that way, is it, not to talk out something, but to temporarily forget what's bothering you, go do something, then your heart feels good, then reflect on what happened from the point of view of how did I blow it. Always it's easy to see how your partner blew it, but what did I do to contribute to the problem? That's all we can really do in relationships. You know, when you live with somebody a long time, last thing they want to hear from you is how they should be changing. You know, love is actually like accepting someone the way they are, not like you have to change for me to feel good in your presence. So learning how to feel good within ourselves is a prerequisite and a foundation we have to come back to again and again. Now, for women, in order to appreciate their partners, which is when women are happiest, is when they feel, oh, I'm so lucky to be with him. I appreciate him so much. You know, the guy's not perfect, but he's perfect for me. Yeah. He's a stud. You know, I'll give you an example of that. My wife, I think at 23 years into the marriage, I said, how do you rate me as a husband, honey? And she said, as a father to our children, you're A+, the best. As a husband, you're not perfect. She said, but you've given me the greatest gift a woman could want. I said, what's that? And she said, I know that sometimes I can make you angry or upset you, or frustrate you. And when you get upset, you always stop talking, you go to your cave, you do some magic, and you always come back with more love. Mm. So I know there's nothing I can say or do that's going to push you out of my life. You know, you're not going anywhere. And but not that I'm not going anywhere, it's that I come back with more love. Because every time you overcome that challenge, you become better at finding that love in your life, being more accepting, having more wisdom, being more patient, being less judgmental. You know, these are just like gifts that we get by learning to overcome our own little buttons that get pushed through places of forgiveness and taking responsibility for how we are not perfect and how we contribute to the problems and trying to make little changes.
I really like that. I love the responsibility aspect of it because I think that's important with what we do as well, but with everything. Because I think other than that, your happiness or who you are is in somebody else's pocket. You know, you're trying to get something, but it's not yours to get. Whereas when you can be responsible for that, it makes it a world of difference. Mm. I've heard you talk, John, about you know, how easy it is for oftentimes, you know, for us to want more in our success or want more in our businesses or want more in our careers. But then sometimes when we're in our relationships and we're asking for more, that, you know, our men will get defensive about the fact that we're wanting more, but it's okay to want more. Can you speak to that a little bit, please?
Yeah, I love this part of it because every guy, and really we're addressing a thing where, you know, guys are kind of like, okay, now we're married. You should be happy with me just the way I am. And that is a part of love, okay? I mean, I like that I'm loved just the way I am. There's no question about it. But we tend to make our partners wrong if they want more. And in business, nobody has a problem with somebody wanting more success, wanting to help more, wanting to do more, wanting to make more money. More is part of life. It's a desiring more is aliveness. However, if we're wanting more and we're not appreciating what we have, then it becomes a problem. And, you know, they find in terms of success in life that children who are able to delay gratification, they do these studies. If you can have delayed gratification, which means patience, if you can put off your immediate gratification for something in the future, you will be much more successful in life. And this has been proven with many studies, you know, these 25-year studies. And what we want, that's actually wanting more in life, but being patient because you have so much. You're grateful for what you have. And that's the secret. And women by nature will always want more. They're the not that a man won't, but his tends to be more, I want more success because success produces testosterone. And women will often want more intimacy, more connection, more acknowledgement of who I am, that I'm good and lovable and you care about me. And and it's the key here is for men to not misinterpret this I want more stuff, because the way a man thinks is more is, let's say I give her 25 roses, more means 50 roses. Actually, that's a misinterpretation. Right. I can give her 25 roses. I can give her 50 roses. It will have the same estrogen response. And I can give her one rose, and it will be an estrogen response. So in my books, I call that scoring points. You know, you every act of love, big or small, scores 1 point with your partner. Now, that's from men to women. When men, when you do big things, you get a point. But that's it, you know. And when they give do little things for you, they give themselves a point for every little thing they do. So she ends up having more points, and it seems like she's winning. But actually, when she's got the score of 33 and you've got 3 because you went to work, that's a point. You came home, that's a point. You're married, that's a point. You got 3 points. She's got 33 points. She makes a new score, 30-0. And she looks at you like you're a zero. Like, what have you done for me? And I can't tell you how many women I counsel who go, I give and give and give. He does nothing. He does nothing. Of course he does stuff for her. But it all gets negated if she's done so much more.
Right.
So how do you keep that score equal? What they want is win-win equal. That's interdependence. Is lots of little things. And so it's it behooves a man to understand the little things that can stimulate estrogen and progesterone, these very important hormones for women. And they look like, and that's giving her more. What she wants is more little things. And right. So it would look like hugs. I do 4 hugs a day at least, a compliment each time, an I love you every day somewhere, not always at the same time. And then, you know, if she's wearing a dress, I'll try to notice what she's wearing, you know, seeing her, letting her know I'm off to the store. Can I pick something up for you? Just including her in some of the daily things you would do. Normally a guy thinks, well, if she needs help, she'll ask for it. If she's not asking for it, she doesn't need it. And she's over there thinking, well, if he's not offering to help me, he doesn't want to help me. So we're constantly misinterpreting each other. And you know, I know we don't have so much time to talk, and I know if so many people are stuck in their houses. I want to give a fun technique to supercharge the hormones, because here's a really practical thing, and I developed it during this time. But I'm going to do it forever. I think it's so much fun. And it's right now so many couples are having challenges because they're with each other all the time. You know, relationship is 80% of your happiness comes from your life separate from your partner. And your partner is like the dessert, is 20% more. And if you're happy from your own life, then your partner, it's easy for them to make you happier. So that's sort of the dynamic here. Mm-hmm. So right now when people are stuck in the house, they're looking to their partner just because they're there for everything. And it can never satisfy you. So the problems become bigger and we become more annoyed, more irritated, more claustrophobic, more, all kinds of crazy thinking in our head goes on. And I want to mention to people, at that time, we often say, oh, my partner showed their real self. No, that's not their real self. That's their confused self. That's who they become when they're out of balance. The real self is who they are when the heart is open. And what can open that heart is literally feeding those hormones. So here's a technique. It takes 20 minutes to do, and it's called a genie in the bottle. Now, what does every man, what produces testosterone? What can a woman do to pump up a man's testosterone? Is give him messages that he is successful in providing for her what she wants and needs. And what makes a woman's hormones go up is when she feels, oh, I can ask for help and get it. Immediate gratification. I can ask and he's there. I can ask and he's there. I'm not alone. Feeling connected. So the way the game works is you say, oh, let's play the game. Either person can start it. And for 20 minutes, he's the genie in the bottle. But she has to rub the bottle. The genie comes out and says, your wish is my command. Not just 3 wishes, as many wishes as you can have in the next 20 minutes. I'm here to fulfill for you. And it's a playful thing where she – see, many when women start to feel this resentment, they stop asking and they start – testing and looking, see, he's not doing something for me, he's not doing for me. And if you did ask him, because his testosterone's low, if you did ask him to do something, part of his reason, he will tend to resist it, grumpy, less, more rigid, less flexible. So in this game, for 20 minutes, you can just, you know, you can put all that to the side. He pretends for the first few minutes to go, oh, I'd be happy to. Oh, immediately, I'll go. She'll say, oh, would you go wash those dishes? Oh, I'll jump to it right now. It's my pleasure to see a smile on your face. And he just overdoes it, kind of like a flight attendant. It's my pleasure. We're happy to do it. What else can I do for you? And she, but he doesn't do anything for her unless she asks. She has to keep asking. And only within 20 minutes. So you wouldn't say, and would you always remember to turn out the lights? Right. That's tomorrow. That's the next day. Everything is just an immediate gratification. And instead of asking for one thing, maybe one big thing, ask for lots of little things. So you're asking for women. It's asking and getting a response. Mm-hmm. So there's a little interaction where she smiles. She's delighted. And he said, it's my pleasure. I'm happy to do this. It's such a joy. And I can do whatever you wish. And so you play this game. It's literally the subconscious mind thinks that you have a genie and he will do anything for you. And he is all powerful. It's an amazing hormonal stimulation. And it's just 20 minutes. You can do it every other day. You could do it when you feel like doing it. But I think it's amazing. Once we understand the importance of this kind of stimulation, particularly when we're stuck together all the time. But another part of it is just simply feeding women's need to feel they're not alone. Because when you're out in the workplace doing your thing, you feel these pressures. It's up to you. It's up to you. And that's good. I mean, that's your masculine power. But women tend to get stuck over there feeling, I have to do everything myself. Mm-hmm. And to help them come back to the female side, most of my books, I've emphasized the importance of being able to share and open up to what she feels. But it turns out that another aspect that's just as powerful and pretty easy to do is these small requests where she gets immediate gratification immediately. And another thing during COVID, I just want to mention, anytime you're learning something new, this is a time where people are stuck at home. Take classes, do aerobic exercise with a leader, get training. Whenever you're learning something new, blood flows to the front part of the brain and cortisol levels and stress hormones become less. So if you're learning, you're using the part of your brain that's in present time, probably one of the most powerful ways to lower stress at this time. Right. And keep in mind that any negative thoughts about your partner during this time is an illusion. Don't even entertain them unless you're just venting. And venting to somebody other than your partner is fine, if, as long as you know this is my dark side coming out so that the light can come back in.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. You talk about men and women being different, but I understand, and I think it's important to clear up, that you don't mean that that means that they're less equal, right? But I notice that now, and a lot of our clients are women, you know, and women in business and women who spend a lot of time wanting to be successful and work is most important for them. How do you, and I've heard you speak about it before, but I'd like you to speak a little bit about how you feel that affects the testosterone estrogen levels in women as a result. Because as you were talking, I was thinking, well, that's really my masculine side coming out, you know, for me in particular, you know, and the testosterone levels are high. And as either women who are partnered or women who are single who are focused on their work, what do you say about that? Can you help with that?
Yes, I really appreciate you bringing that out. And just as a clarification, women who are more independent, more goal-oriented, success-oriented out in the world on their own, more independent, it doesn't necessarily mean their testosterone levels are higher. They could be, but it means they're making testosterone. Whenever you're independent, you're making testosterone. And in most cases, when you're making testosterone, you're not making estrogen.
Right.
So your estrogen levels tend to stay lower. Now, when your estrogen levels are low, you feel less feminine. And if you were to actually go over there, because there's a tendency, these emotions will come up. Mm-hmm. If I'm being the woman for a moment, if I entertain those emotions, it feels like weakness.
Right.
And it feels unlovable.
Mm-hmm.
See, because if a man is that way, if you're working with some guy out there and he gets all emotional and everything, you go, ugh, it's kind of disgusting. Mm-hmm. He's so needy. So your fear is that if I go there, it will seem disgusting and too needy. And it could be if it's too much, without a doubt. But it's coming back over to the female side isn't natural once you're over on the male side. Mm-hmm. Now, you also mentioned the thing about being equal. I think the simple way of putting it is that, you know, respecting people equally is what we're all trying to do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that doesn't mean we're the same. Equal, but not the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's in every situation. But it's just when it comes to men and women, even within the realm of, I'm saying, common differences between men and women, within the realm of women, there's a huge range of differences in there too. But what we have is when you're feeling stressed, just to know, biologically, your hormones are out of balance. Your non-stress hormones aren't functioning in a harmonious place.
Yeah.
So that typically means for women, when they're not happy and fulfilled, peaceful and relaxed, okay, they can't find that part of them, which is feeling love and feeling in love, which they've had it. They know what that feeling is. And when they can't find that feeling, generally it's because they've been too far, too long on their male side and haven't been taken the time to come back to the female side, and not understanding how to do that either, because it is not natural to do that. You know, whenever we're out of balance, coming back in balance is generally not natural. Let's take an example. Let's say I have a bad habit. I eat too much sugar. It feels very natural to eat sugar. Sure. Give me a gallon of ice cream and sure, I'll go at it. I can't even keep it in my house because I go, oh, it feels so good. It feels so natural. Yeah. But it's throwing my blood sugar out of balance. And to give it up is an act of willpower and knowing I have to provide extra nutrition for myself. Otherwise, I'm going to be craving that imbalanced state. I use that as just an example metaphor for when you're way on your male side and you're a woman, coming back to your female side is not always so easy unless somebody points out to you and you recognize, hey, you know, just solving problems all day isn't making me as happy as I want to be. Maybe something else is missing, and what's missing is an exploration and attention to the female side of me, which in the beginning may not feel natural, might feel very awkward, might feel very much not me at all until you get back to that place. Now, ever since I've been in this COVID time staying home, I'm doing lots of exercise. I've got one of these bicycles inside the house. You do your bicycling, and I never did it before, but now I'm here. And now I'm missing it. I want to do it. Now that I'm into the balls rolling, that feels really, really good to me. Mm-hmm. But before, I'd have all this procrastination, and I'd put it off. I put other things as more important. You know, I'd sit and watch the news as opposed to getting on my bike and using some muscle power. Mm-hmm. And actually, that then lowers the stress. That then creates new neural pathways. So unconsciously, when I'm stressed, now I'll go in that direction to lower stress as opposed into the other way, which does feel good. Going out of balance often feels good, but it's not productive in the long run.
Let me ask a question there. Sorry, Mills. Just let me squeeze in here. So something fundamental happened when, like, I got a 10-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 4-year-old. And we had our kids late. So I was 37 when our first child turned up. I feel like I'm 700 years old now, and it's only been 10 years.
How old are you?
I'm 47. I'm 47. But when the kids turned up, it was like we actually started to get on better, and we were like, oh my God, we the arguing and the push-pull stopped, you know, and it became about the kids. But I spoke earlier, I said to you, you know, when I was dropping those 16 topics, one of the things that I'm noticing now about, you know, I got a 10-year-old who's going to be a teenager in 3 years, and, you know, we're heading into that digital age and that immediate gratification. You know, I spoke a little bit about, you know, dating on an app before they even catch up physically. I don't know whether, are you able to speak into that at all for parents who are going, who are clients of yours, who are going through that stuff about how to handle it and you know.
What's different?
What's different?
That's the question actually I was going to ask is, you know, what's different now in terms of, you know, how you approach it, how people are approaching relationships and communication now. And also I suppose, you know, when you first wrote that book, you know, your first book, and now I know you've written many books, but, you know, things you will have noticed things have changed over the years. Can you share a little bit about that and what?
Well, can I just say, I mean, my concept is that, you know, the conversations are shorter because they're text. The connection is through electromagnetic particles of light, which is just love. Love is light, it's consciousness, it's love, it's da 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 da. There's less fluffing around. They're getting straight to the point. And there is primitive parts of it as well, because it can be bitchiness and all that sort of stuff, and you know that goes on between both sexes. But it seems that it's a natural evolution. Obviously, it is. But I suppose I don't know what I'm asking there. But how do you see it?
There's again, I unpack a lot of what you said, and first of all, I do have a book on parenting was called Children Are From Heaven. People may not know that. Okay. And it's really quite wonderful to understand our children and what they need most. But you're addressing this change, which has affected adults and it's affected children's, which is the digital age. Digital age is high stimulation, immediate gratification. I get it now. I get it now. I get it now. I want it now. I want it now. And what that does feels great. You know, when we were growing up, we had eight track audio, okay? That means you had to listen to all the songs before you got to the song you wanted, you know, and the radio. You had to go through all this other stuff before you can get to what you want. Now, instant gratification. I want this, I can go here, I go here. So much instant gratification. And what that does, it stimulates higher levels of dopamine, okay? So we have to get a little brain science here. And dopamine is pleasure, and it's addictive. We want that, and there's nothing wrong with dopamine. It's what causes me to want to do this interview. It's pleasurable. It's making a difference. There's a lot of things that stimulate dopamine. When people have lots of sugar, for example, they're stimulating dopamine. Sugar produces dopamine. Coffee produces dopamine. So how much coffee you drink, it might be too much, might not be enough. How much sugar do you eat? Could be too much, not enough. So there's nothing inherently wrong about those things. There's nothing wrong with digital. It's just how much. And so we have to understand what happens in the brain. What happens in the brain is if you have high levels of dopamine, let's say twice as high, okay, I just won a contest. Boom, you know, I won $500. I got that little ticket. I was at some party and they have the numbers read out and boom, I won, you know, $500 in, you know. I can make $500. It's not that exciting. But if I won it, it was just like big dopamine stimulation. Okay, so excitement, right? So everybody can relate to that. Something out of the ordinary, boom, big dopamine. What happens is that big shot of dopamine lands on what's called dopamine receptors in the brain to then move on to another dopamine receptor to move on to another. But it's such a big shot, the brain says, oh, that was great, but that was too much. And so the receptor sites begin to shrink. So just like if you looked into the sun, your pupils would contract. Then you go into the darkness, you can't see anything. Well, when you have this high dopamine excitement, then right away after that, when you settle down, you go down lower. Your ability to enjoy normal stimulation becomes less. And then you have high stimulation, you feel less. So then you crave high stimulation. Mm-hmm. And if you don't get high stimulation, then you feel bored and empty and not motivated. And then you crave that high stimulation. Now, that's just the way the brain operates. And that's okay, as long as after you have high stimulation, you're then deprived of high stimulation and you relax and you rest and then you come back into balance. And then suddenly nothing's happening around you and you're pretty happy. Life doesn't have to be pleasing you all the time. You're rather satisfied and interested. But if you get these big high dopamine hits again and again and again, literally, that's like cocaine. Cocaine stimulates this very high dopamine hit. Then you lose. Now, this is what they found with cocaine. You lose 30% of your dopamine receptors. They go to sleep. They can come back. But in order for them to come back, you have to go through this withdrawal period. to the extent that you were so high, you're going to be that low until you relax and you come back into balance. Coming back into balance takes time. Now, all addiction, this is basically the principle of addiction. And right now, we become addicted to digital stimulation. And that's what's happening. And this may be something, I don't know if you can say on the air, but it's the online pornography is like cocaine. And this is something our boys are very, very vulnerable to. Girls to some extent, but boys much more so. And I predicted it in about 20 years ago, and now it's happening. Boys are 21 years old, and they are impotent when they're with a real girl. See, a real girl cannot stimulate you, your dopamine, as high as fantasy and digital. So digital just has an effect of producing super high levels of dopamine. One of the reasons for that is that your imagination goes to that, and you're not experiencing all of the other cofactors like serotonin, like oxytocin, the connection with your partner, a real person. It's all fantasy, so dopamine shoots way high, and that brings your testosterone way up, so you get this hit like you're taking cocaine. And then you immediately, it goes back down, you feel empty, and then your body craves that high and craves that high. In a normal relationship, normal life becomes boring. And so what we have is this kind of all started with not just porn, but also the MTV revolution where, you know, the music was loud and quick. The visions were changing very, very quickly, and more the clothes were coming off. Sex is a big dopamine stimulator. Loud sounds, colors, brightness, fast changing. And so what that's happening to the brain. And what is the answer to that? I wrote a whole book on that, which is called Staying Focused in a Hyper World. We just get so distracted now. We want this, then we want that, we want this. Or we want high stimulation. You know, these kids with ADD who can't maintain focus on a teacher, they can sit and play a video game totally focused for hours and hours and hours because that's a high dopamine stimulator. Accomplishment, immediate gratification, life and death, sex, all this stuff's going on. People running around controlling. They're built to stimulate high levels of dopamine. And if you want to know if your children are addicted to that, just take away those games and watch what happens. They'll go through withdrawals. So the solution to this is not to try to knock out digital all the way. That's the world we're living in. But limit the amount of time. Just like if you're drinking, okay, drink a little alcohol and that's it. Then you have to go to the other direction and relax and then come back to it. So it's a back and forth. Children need to have time in nature playing. Boys always should have supervision around them. We just don't have enough supervision with boys today. And so what happens is it's dangerous. And so they will bond with the most dysfunctional male. And so that's what creates gangs, danger, dysfunction, behaving in ways your parents wouldn't approve of, all stimulates dopamine as well. But on safety, you get in a situation without supervision, it's going to be the dangerous person that runs the show. And that's what's happening to kids today as well.
Oh, John, we are getting the wind up here. We need to wrap it up. I could talk for another couple of hours. I'm here. I got lots more to ask. I feel like I haven't covered any of it. But what I
hope that was helpful.
Oh, it was really helpful. Magic. That was great.
Yeah, really good. That's been fantastic. Really
good. And the other thing, you asked twice, so I need to quickly answer, is long distance relationships. It's good and it's not good. What happens is you can develop communication skills by talking with somebody where you're not in their presence, because usually there's a lot less fear. But you can actually bond with somebody, but you're still in fantasy land. When you meet them, you have to be prepared for rejection. And that's why I say you should always have lots of photographs that change between you, so that if you are rejected when you meet, that you're not going to blame it on your appearance. Because we're very visual people. But they're beyond visual is just the energetics of how I interact with you when I'm really in your presence. Because we can very easily fantasize a person and then fall in love with that fantasy. And then you get reality and they can say the same things, but you're actually in their energy field and you don't feel the same chemistry. So just to know that pictures need to be shared, accurate pictures, so that when you meet, if you are rejected, if nothing happens, if the chemistry immediately goes away, sometimes that happens, you're not going to blame it on how you look.
Yourself.
That's a hard thing.
John,
that was really
we've
cool.
absolutely loved this. I know our audience will be like, wow, that was great. Can we get this guy back on again at some stage? And most likely I would love to be able to do that. I'd love to be able to get you back on and
dive
have
deeper
chat.
That was great,
because I think you've worked out my whole life just in 1 hour.
Mitch has got all these tips now.
I'm going home and I'm going to go, honey, I know why you're so fucked up. I've worked it out.
Thanks so much, John. Yep. We really appreciate it. Really appreciate it.
A real pleasure for me too. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks, John.
Bye-bye.
John.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.